I did not read the holy Buddhist scriptures. I know very little about Buddha's teaching, but what I always heard is Sarvam Dukkham, which is usually translated by all or everything. It's not the same. All or everything is suffering. And I think Buddha was speaking Pali, maybe. Then it was translated in Sanskrit and then in other languages. And my question is about the translation by suffering. For me, it sounds psychological suffering. As you told us, I think yesterday, of course, when you wake up in the morning, we don't wish to suffer. But what I feel is if suffering is necessary on the path, I am ready. Once, a long time ago, I asked a question to my master, how to get rid of negativity. The answer was, I remember very well, yes, get rid of negativity, but you should also be free from positivity. It's what you said, maybe to be neutral. So, about dukkham, suffering, what I know little in Sanskrit, that maybe originally it means to be out of cosmic law. It's not exactly the same. And so for me, to be out of Dharma, cosmic Dharma. So the translation could be Sarvam is all what is manifested, is by nature out of Dharma. I don't want to change the translation, but maybe it should not be translated. And no translation would let open a space for reflection, and this reflection could help us on the path. So no translation. So Advaita Vedanta and Buddhism, I agree, it is the same understanding of Sarvam Dukkham if we don't translate.
Okay, there's several threads there to pick up. Maybe the first one is just the word dukkha. As soon as you translate it, then you solidify it. And it has a very, very broad meaning in the Pali language. And I think in English, there's some words are really worth incorporating into the language. Like nowadays, just the word Dhamma or Dharma, or karma as well, these are words that are not just creeping, they're starting to be defined in the dictionaries because they're becoming common. And I think dukkha is a good one to try to get into the language because it does have so many meanings and so many nuances and certainly in, say, like in the language that our second language I'm familiar with is the Thai language, and they don't translate it. It's just dukkha, and then you can riff on the nuances. But in terms of the meaning, it was a few years ago I came across an etymological explanation of the word dukkha. That dukkha being a word that is like way pre-Buddhist, and in the root of the word, it's a very ancient India before, and we think sort of Buddhism is ancient India, but this that even before that, the word dukkha, it did point to say suffering or unsatisfactoriness or difficulty or something, but it's like in the language, du is something that's, say, bad, unwanted, unpleasant. Su is like, sukha is happiness. So sukha and dukkha are kind of pairs. But du as something that doesn't sort of work, doesn't fit, is not comfortable, is not easy. The word kha, because ancient India was a horse culture, wagons and chariots were part, and kha was where the axle fit into the wheel. And when it fit and rolled smoothly and comfortably and pleasantly, it was sukha. And when it didn't fit, it was too tight, or it was too bumpy, or it was uncomfortable, it was dukkha. So it has a certain prosaic meaning to it, but I think it's helpful to recognize just that it doesn't fit. It's not comfortable. This is not a pleasant experience. So dukkha, suffering. When the Buddha taught another aspect of dukkha, is, yeah, certainly there is the psychological experiential element to when the Buddha describes dukkha throughout the discourses, but in particular when he first introduces the idea in his first discourse, he points to the fundamental experiences of the human experience. Birth is dukkha, aging is dukkha, sickness is dukkha, death is dukkha, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are dukkha. Not getting what one wants is dukkha. Association with the disliked is dukkha. Being separated from the liked is dukkha. But then, in short, these five aggregates of being subject to clinging are dukkha. And it's not the elements of being, so form, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness, these five aggregates of being, that are subject to In Pali, it's called the Panch Upadana Khanda. He doesn't say Pancha Khanda or Dukkha. It's like the Pancha Khanda are just there. Form, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness are just there. They're performing a function. We rely on them. But it's when they are subject to grasping or clinging, these different forms of attachment that we assume or get caught up in or believe in, that is the source of our dukkha. And so that say in the Pali, the Buddha doesn't talk about everything being dukkha. It's just dukkha exists. There is dukkha, which is different than everything is dukkha. Because everything is a categorical statement that, well, it's not a sure thing. It's the getting up in the morning in Rishikesh, can be quite pleasant. But it's as soon as those elements of grasping and clinging kick in, and they are ready to kick in. That is when we set in motion the experience of dukkha. The different forms of grasping and clinging that the Buddha points to are one, just sensuality, the clinging to sensual gratification, stimulation, just that relying on a sensory and sensual excitement is dukkha, because the aspect of dukkha is also that it's associated with its transitoriness, its changingness, so that whatever comes into being is always in the process of ceasing. And so what we experience is going to cease, which is, again, just a function of nature. But when we cling to it, then we create suffering. So something that is pleasant can be pleasant when we don't cling to it. Or even something that is unpleasant doesn't necessarily need to be suffering, because it's just an unpleasant experience. It can be experienced for what it is. And sometimes, it's just unpleasant that we really learn from. It wakes us up sometimes. And similarly, the goal is not necessarily a neutrality in that sense of an indifference, but it's just recognizing that there is a neutral experience, and it has to be known in the same way that pleasant and unpleasant need to be known. The other, forms of grasping and clinging are much more internal. One is the Sila Bhatta Upadana, which is the clinging to, and it's sometimes translated as, the old translations was clinging to rites and rituals. Newer translation are clinging or attachment to precept and practice. So that when we assume that if I just did something a certain way or got it all right and followed the formula, then I would be pure. And it's not how it works. It's still gonna create suffering if you don't understand. And you have to be able to use the forms, use the precepts, use the practices, in order for freedom rather than for fulfilling a particular idea of what you think you should be doing. The other is four altogether. The third one is Ditta Upadana, which is clinging to views. clinging to opinions. And you don't have to think too much about that one to realize that is suffering. And whether it's religious views or whether it's worldly views, there's just so many arguments and conflict just come out of our opinions and views and taking a stand on something. And the last one that the Buddha points to is an interesting in terms of the language, because it's attavadupadana. So it's not, sometimes it's translated as clinging to self, but it's attavada, as is clinging to the assumption of self is suffering. Because that sense of, again, coming back to the not-self doctrine, we assume that I into existence, that is but as soon as we assume it, it's going to come and bite us again. And so we have to recognize that, yeah, the I-making and mind-making and the habit and the clinging that we form around identity and identification. And so that when we're able to relinquish that grasping and clinging, then you know, there's nowhere for, say, suffering to form. That translation of dukkha, you know, because it does have, you know, many, many nuances, both, you know, on the psychological level of, you know, say pain, sorrow, lamentation, grief, and despair, all of the psychological, emotional elements of suffering, but then also in the sense of fundamentally the unsatisfactory nature of things, whether they're external or internal, coarse or refined, near or far, you're not going to be able to make something fully satisfy you. Because it just is a thing. And so that being able to see through that, one can just simply return to knowing, being the knowing, being clear, being aware, being abiding in that non-clinging. Also, something comes to mind. It's like when, like, Ajahn Chah once defined defined Nibbana. Nibbana is the reality of non-grasping. So that say the goal of our practice, Nibbana, the ending of suffering, is just the reality that there is this non-grasping that is possible, and we can turn to that. We can rely on that. We can have that as a refuge. So anyway, there's some riffs on dukkha.
Yeah.
Pranam. Today, I focused on the chanting of the suttas, and I found that it is like Hanuman Chalisa, Joya Pade Hanuman Chalisa Hoi Siddhi. Means vacha, something like that, chanting. That if you read this or chant the suktas, then you will be fearless. There will be no suffering like that, if I am correct. So my question is, it is also one kind of desire that we read and we will become fearless. Is it desire also? Then you said the desire is the cause of the suffering. Then secondly, wearing a particular, my question is not pinpointed, targeted to anyone. It is general question. Wearing different kind of clothes is also not eye making. Thank you.
The in terms of desire, I think one of the things that's important to recognize is, and I touched on it this morning, that there's two different forms of desire that are translated as desire, and the Buddha specifically uses the word tanha as the kind of desire that's always associated with greed, hatred, delusion, and necessarily ends up in suffering. But desire is also a natural part of our human makeup, and we have to learn how to use it. So then that's where the Buddha uses the term chanda as desire, and it could be maybe translated as motivation, interest, as well as desire. But it is a necessary part. You know, you don't do anything without getting yourself motivated first, and you don't just acquiesce and do nothing and think that that's somehow the end of suffering. But it has to be employed with wisdom, and it has to be used judiciously. So you have to understand. And it's so easy for grasping and clinging and identification to creep in to either of those forms of desire. So that it's an ongoing investigation, ongoing contemplation. And that's why the Buddha uses, say, suffering as one of his main tools, because it gives us a feedback of what's the result of this? How is this playing out? Is this worthwhile? Is this beneficial? So that if it ends up in suffering, then okay, there's your clue. There's a problem here. So that's starting to discern between the different forms of desire that one has. So that kind of plays into wearing particular garb or dress or following it can be used in the employ of identification and conceit and views, and it does all the time. You don't have to go very far in religious history to see that, or human history. But then it always ends up in suffering. So that they being able to use the forms of the world in a way that are in the use of or in the for the benefit of freedom and liberation and non-suffering, and for a sense of living together as human beings with harmony and compassion.